I was back in my home village here some time ago, and strolling along there, I saw something that just made me think. You actually can't see it in the camera, because you can't look through a hedge with the camera, but there's a plastic stork standing inside this garden. I know that people put plastic storks in garden. There isn't really anything surprising about it, but then later the same day, I saw the news in one of the main TV channels, and it was talking about storks and how the handful of nesting couples that are still in Denmark were actually doing. So I just thought that I'd share a little reflection about what exactly it is that some North Europeans find to be so bloody important about storks. This is the Nordic Animism channel, where I explore and popularize a majority traditional knowledge perspective on Nordic cultural history in order to recover knowledge of land connectedness and kinship with the more than human community of beings in Nordic culture. I try to create initiatives and to launch perspectives into contemporary culture in order to reconnect with parts of our cultural history that may teach us ways of human community that don't inflict total apocalypse on the world. You can support me by checking out my web shop, or you can Patreon support this work. My very deepest gratitude to the amazing Patreon supporters who already honor me by contributing to this work. I mean, we all know that corny old story of storks bringing babies that people in the sort of Anne of Green Gables generations used to tell kids in order to avoid mentioning genitals. But what exactly is behind that? And why this remarkable cultural attention in southern Scandinavia? And the animist backstory, when I looked into this a little bit, is actually really astonishing. First, it's worth noting that in natural history, storks haven't actually been in southern Scandinavia for all that long. In fact, I think it might be a distinctly South Scandinavian phenomenon. I think Denmark is sort of the northern border of how far north storks go. And natural history suggests that it might have become an important animal there as late as in the 1400s-1500s. But boy, did this bird appeal to people here. I mean, for real. I think there's something about storks that just presses a lot of buttons somehow. I can't help kind of thinking that cranes might have already been kind of important, but then this crane-like bird came or emerged or became more widespread and just started living in very close relation with humans, as if it insisted on being a relation. Storks like settling on rooftops. During old-fashioned harvesting, they would sometimes walk behind the man with the scythe, picking frogs and mice in the newly harvested fields. Literally walking with the harvesters. They've had a bit of a habit of dropping stuff that humans can sometimes eat, like an eel or a fish or something like that. So they're sometimes said to have paid to live with humans. So there's a very explicitly reciprocal relation there. They were also said to pay tithe by giving something, sometimes an egg, sometimes a chick or a feather. Its feathers, its fat, and particularly the beak are powerful amulets that have been used for protective purposes. Storks are migratory birds, and their habit of arriving in spring and leaving after harvests has made them strong symbols of fertility and blessing. Very strong symbol. The Danish national poet Hans Christian Andersen said, "You wondrous, mysterious birds, on your backs the god of spring rides into the land." People gave, and still give actually, strong attention to when they arrive. Do they come on Lady Day, a day of fertility, or do they come on some other day? And That information is actually preserved with amazing precision. In this village, the stork would arrive on that date, and over here it would come on that date. And people would note that if they came late, then the stork would owe us a barrel of beer. Their arrival was densely beset with omens for the year. Storks and their behavior in general was in fact just very dense with omens about human life. There was also sometimes an almost teasing relationship with these birds. There's a great wealth of little rhymes that children have been using addressing storks, and people actually used to talk to storks quite a lot, trying to interpret these crackling sounds that they make with their beaks. Look at them gaping towards the sky. This is a characteristic movement that they make, and see that as them conversing with God. And there was all kinds of formulas addressing them. When the stork arrives, people would lift their hat and say stuff like, "Welcome, Peter. I'm happy that you are here." For some reason, the stork was called Peter. Or, "Good day, my compatriot. What do you bring us this year?" Or when the stork leaves, "Little Peter, may you be well, so that it will also be well for me." Notice the interdependence there. The stork has had some kind of affinity with the family life in a farm, almost like a protective spirit. It was considered a very sacred bird. The stork was said to intercede with God on our behalf, and it was a very great blessing to have a stork on your house. People used to put an old wheel on the roof in order to attract storks to build a nest there. People still do that today, even though there barely aren't any storks. Because if a stork nests on your house, then there will be peace and harmony there. A stork nesting on your house would mean good wealth and fortune. Lightning will not strike. The house will not catch fire. Livestock will be well. Foxes and hawks will not inflict problems where there are storks. And if a stork moves, of course, that's a problem. There are stories that if a stork moves from one end of the house to the other, then lightning strikes in the place that it has abandoned. Or if a stork builds on a chimney, then people will build another chimney rather than disturbing this important and sacred bird. If it leaves, then that can be a really bad sign. Or it could mean that you should move with it. If you destroy a stork's nest, then the whole farm is going to crash, and herding storks is a very grave sin. Lightning will hit your house, and a wealth of misfortune, death, disease, and madness will fall on you if you herd a stork. In one case, a man hanged himself in sheer desperation after having accidentally killed a stork. In fact, people saw storks as humans. Yup. Storks were humans turned into birds. The iconically totemic animist idea that we also know from ravens, typically an important human like a pastor, was actually the stork, right? There was a myth that a stork has no tongue because it was a pastor who spoke God's name in vain before the deluge. And I think that sounds cool, but I tell you the truth, I have no clue what it means. Or the stork could be an Asian prince from far away who wished to become a bird and was then turned into a stork. Or more commonly, people would say that a stork becomes human when it is away from our lands. Some people have even reported to have visited the land of the storks, and people gave a lot of thought to exactly where these birds spend the winter. And people seem to have reached the conclusion that it was in some biblical mythic lands, which corresponds to the fact that sailors are, you know, have come home and reported to have seen them in places like Egypt and Israel, these kind of places. So there was a lot of lore about when they crossed this or that biblical location on their way back to us, like the Red Sea. And this is all not that far off. Storks do actually migrate down through Europe, Israel, Sinai, to stay the winter in Africa. Storks were therefore sometimes seen as Egyptians on a soul journey here. And this was also part of the reason that you should not be violent to storks. They're human. Numerous stories talk about people being violent to storks, but then regretting it when they meet them in human forms in their own country, in the stork lands. In these particular stories, Stork people seem to be rather kind and forgiving, considering how serious of an offense violence towards storks generally was. And it sounds weird, but this idea of storks as human is actually a very iconically animist idea. The idea that animals have a human-like community, and then they turn into animal form when they enter into our sphere. This idea of storks as humans in another world is directly paralleled, for instance, in Amazonian animisms. And you find it also with ravens, by the way. Like ravens and crows, storks seem to have had iconic aspects of human community. They hold a thing, which in the Nordic means a Nordic parliamentary gathering. The storks seem to have had a lot of things to discuss in their things, in their own stork language, and their dealings were centered around procreation, because storks were associated with fertility and harvest and with children. So storks were almost like patrons of marriage, and they were thought to congregate and to punish severely between them transgressions to fidelity. This idea of storks as people might be linked to the commonly known myth of storks bringing babies. This idea of storks bringing babies probably springs from ideas of storks as omens of fertility and thereby also babies. But there's more to it than just that. Often the storks are said to pick the babies from under the water from some local beach or lake or fjord, or from some places that seem like portals to the other world, like a sacred stone in the landscape where the storks would fly in and pick out the human soul, perhaps. I think this idea has shamanic roots. The idea that you go into an other world for human souls, and this other world is under water, right? There's a spirit world under the water, and that is a very common shamanic idea, and it's a really important idea in Nordic cultural history that crossing water brings you in contact with the other world. So birds that swim on water or walk on water or reach underwater, they are transgressors that traverse between the heavens and the underworlds somehow. And what do storks actually get under the surface of the water? Well, typically they pick frogs. And frogs have a very human-like form with head and arms and fingered hands and feet, right? So a stork carrying a frog towards its nest on the roof or the chimney of the farm, that looks like an image of a stork carrying a small human being towards a farm. So I think that storks, like ravens, have been seen as carriers of human souls, where ravens, as carrion birds, are seen mostly as bringing the souls of the dead back to the other world. Storks coming in spring and bringing these little human-like figures to the top of human houses, this images fertility and the bringing of the soul to the newly born. So, of course, the presence of storks represents that these soul bringers are a new soul is needed, a new human is in the oven, is in the making, right? Hence, storks as omens of children, then, of course, this is then devolved into this Victorian prudence of avoiding to tell children about sex. So the experience of this particular word as very close and intimate kin to humans is really a very strong and multifaceted aspect of North European culture. I have not come anywhere near covering all its aspects here, but I just want to mention this little reflection. And this incredibly sacred bird, it seems actually to have been so powerful that it could also sometimes mean destructive things. If the storks build on a church roof, then that is just too much, and it means war, for instance. And the role of transporter of souls also sometimes implied that it could be an omen of death. If the stork is looking down the chimney, it might actually be looking to pick up the soul of somebody and bring it back onto the water. So in southern Scandinavia, storks have been incredibly important. Hans Christian Andersen features storks in 12 of his stories, and I don't know to what extent this is a particularly Danish thing. It might be very widespread in German, Poland, England, the Baltics where there's storks. But here, for sure, the stork has been considered actually a national bird, and its demise from our landscape has been experienced as a national catastrophe because we have lost the stork. It's not here anymore because these wetlands with all the little creepy crawlies that it likes to eat, they aren't really there anymore. These areas have been drained in order to make space for intensified industrial farming. And even that is actually foretold in traditional lore. You find stories that some sibyl of sorts has foretold that one day the storks will be so rare in this land that the children will ask their mothers what a stork looked like. And amazingly, you know, incredibly, the importance of the stork is probably not expressed more clearly than in the old idea that when the storks disappear, that means the end of the world. So I think that these plastic storks in people's gardens, I think they really express an almost desperate longing for this bird that has become so rare that I've never seen one in my life in Denmark. My children would definitely have to ask their mother what a stork looks like. We're pretty much there at the coming of the end of the world. There are about 9 breeding couples left in Denmark, and I just happened on the weather forecast in one of the main TV channels, which reported extensively on the state of these different couples. One of the females had found a new boyfriend, and they all have names, of course, but then the old one came and chased the new suitor off, and an egg was already there in one of the nests. Of course, they're like cameras on all of these nests. So in spite of how incredibly rare they are, I know 2 villages in the area where I come from, where the local community have put up these wheel-shaped contraptions, trying to invite storks to come and stay. I mean, it is so unlikely that that would happen. There's so few of them. And I can't even like fully express what it would mean to these people if they looked up there one day and found a pair of nesting storks in their village. The return of this animal would mean so much for people. I remember seeing the ravens return. They used to be very rare, and I was sitting looking in a binocular out on my father's fields, slowly realizing that I could not convince myself that the bird I was looking at was not a raven. I remember telling people that I was seeing ravens. They didn't believe me. And that felt pretty damn important. But storks, you know, if storks returned, I think it would create an incredible cultural reaction in southern Scandinavia. But the thing is, of course, that it's not just these birds. It's those wetlands with all those frogs and salamanders and snakes and whatnot. And so the loss of the stork is not just the loss of one biological species. It is a loss of a whole culture, landscape, actually, and being in relation with that landscape, which has degenerated and become much more impoverished. And therefore, I think that the urge for this strong and beautiful animal kinship is really a very deep expression of loss of land connectedness in this part of the world. And I think there's a very touching sadness and passion in this desperate calling for this beautiful, but also trickster-like, homely, but also mysterious bird to return to us. Thanks for watching, and see you around.